start with chapter 7, text 13. Tribhir gunamaye bhavayet ebhi sarvamadam jagat mohitam nabhi janati mam ebhya paramavayam. Deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the whole world does not know me, whom above the modes and inexhaustible. Prabhupada says here, the whole world is enchanted by the three modes of material nature. Those who are bewildered by these three modes cannot understand that transcendental to this material nature is the Supreme Lord Krishna. Every living entity under the influence of material nature has a particular type of body and a particular type of psychological and biological activities accordingly. There are four classes of men functioning in the three modes of material nature. Those who are purely in the mode of goodness are called brahmanas. Those who are purely in the mode of passion are called kshatriyas. And those who are in the modes of both passion and ignorance are called vaishyas. Those who are completely in ignorance are called shudras. And those who are less than that are animals or animal life. So what Srila Prabhupada is referring to here in this verse, it says, Tribhir gunamaye bhavaye ebhi sarvamadam jagat. So the whole world is essentially bound by the three modes of material nature. It is truly, as we were mentioning previously, it is like a curtain, yoga maya samavrata. It literally covers our consciousness. But what is that curtain? It's our very material existence itself, right? Like you as a spirit soul, kishagra shata bhagasya shatadha kalpitasya, you're a tiny little fragment of God. You're a small piece of chitkanaha, right? You're a piece of the chit potency of Krishna. And so you're pure spirit soul, and yet you cannot see reality clearly because you're covered. You're wearing a mask. There's something covering your eyes, right? And that covering is your material existence itself. And so according to the three modes of material nature, we're all bound in certain forms of conditioned existence, right? Now, as Prabhupada says here, that you have, of course, he mentioned within human society, you have these four classes, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. These are composed of the three modes of material nature. And therefore, we are conditioned by the various modes in the form of the material body. Does that make sense? So if you have a sattvic body, which is very rare in Kali Yuga, but if you have a sattvic body, then you're essentially covered or conditioned or bound by the mode of goodness. And you can't see beyond it. You see the world through it. You're stuck within that body. Similarly, for a kshatriya, it's passion. For a vaishya, it's passion, ignorance. And for a shudra, it's the mode of ignorance. You see the world through a thick, thick layer of tamagun. And of course, in animal life, as Prabhupada says here, you have every living entity has a particular type of body and a particular type of psychological and biological activities accordingly. So, meaning that our material body, like even our psychological nature, the way we think of things, the way we look at things, right? What to speak of physically, then this is all conducted by the three modes of material nature. So if you're in an animal body, you can see it very clearly. Like they are very strongly conducted by their mode of nature. They don't have very much freedom. Like a dog must act like a dog. You know, or even in terms of their sexuality, you know, when it's a certain time of the year, then they want to mate, right? But not otherwise. There's a very strongly conditioned by the modes of material nature. So for the human being, you know, even though an animal's conditioning may be very severe and it doesn't have much freedom to choose, within the human form of life, there is a little bit of freedom. You have, it's more mobile, you know? You can sort of, even though you're bound very strictly by your particular body and the birth that you have and the psychological nature that you've inherited, right? And the biological nature that you've inherited, you're strictly bound by that. But as a human being, there's a little bit of wiggle room. You can because the consciousness is more prominent, the consciousness is more clear. Therefore, you can. There's a little more choice. For example, Krishna mentions this in the earlier chapter, Dhumanaya Vriyate Vahanir Yatar Darsho Malena Cha, right? So the lower forms of life, like for example animals, they're compared to, their consciousness is compared to dust on a mirror. You know, you can see that there's, when you're looking in a dusty mirror, you can see movement. You can't really see clearly what it is, but you know something's there. So similarly, you can see the consciousness of an animal, but it's covered very strongly by its conditioning. And in plant life, yatol bena vrito garbhas, it's like a baby covered by a womb, right? a fetus covered by the womb. So, you know, there are some symptoms of life, but it's their consciousness is so heavy and so dark and so deep that it's practically like they're unconscious. You know, you practically cannot detect there's a life. The soul certainly cannot experience reality in a very clear way. Whereas with the human being, it's compared to smoke and fire. Even though the fire may be smoky, and there's different light types of fire. Some fire isn't smoky at all, right? And some fire is billowing smoke. You can't even see the flame. So with the human being, the consciousness is clear enough to where you can actually pretty strongly, the consciousness can interact with the world, right? And the consciousness, if the smoke is made to disappear, you know, like if the fire is made to blaze and the smoke diminishes, then very clearly the fire can experience the world or see the world by its own light, right? And so in the same way, the living entity, the human being, there's some freedom to actually move. You can cultivate, to a certain degree, your modes of nature, especially in spiritual life, to Krishna consciousness. You can cultivate the mode of goodness, and with the initiation of a bona fide spiritual master, especially, which is compared to, you know, turning bell metal into gold, there's a transformative power. So the human being, this particular life form, is meant for spiritual transformation. That's our strength, right? Just like if you have a gazelle or a cheetah or something, their strength is they can move fast. It's sensual, right? Or the gorilla or a chimpanzee can swing from branches. And, you know, it has its strengths. Whereas the human being, our strength is transformation of consciousness, the ability to worship, right? The ability to perform yajna, sacrifice, and to essentially uncover our consciousness completely through the process of yoga, right? So the living entity, we have this power to exalt our consciousness, to bring out our pure consciousness and see the world in that purified state. And that's through the process of yoga, essentially focusing the mind on the Supreme. But nevertheless, it is a prison, right? The three modes of material nature are binding us. So the human being, though, because of our nature, we can kind of adjust our modes a bit. And, you know, there's rare examples. For example, Vishvamitra Muni, although he was born in a family of a kshatriya, he was able to transform into a brahmana. And certainly in the Krishna consciousness movement, you have persons who are born in families lower than shudras, right? Who are able to transform themselves by the power of Krishna's grace into sattvic brahmanas, or qualified, according to the shastra, to even perform Vedic sacrifices, which require one to be extremely pure, right? Now, Prabhupada says here, however, these designations are not permanent. I may either be a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or whatever. In any case, this life is temporary. But although this life is temporary and we do not know what we are going to be in the next life, by the spell of this illusory energy, we consider ourselves in terms of this bodily conception of life. And thus we think that we are American, Indian, Russian, or Brahmin, Hindu, Muslim, etc. And if we become entangled in the modes of material nature, then we forget the Supreme Person of Godhead, who is behind all these modes. So as we were mentioning previously, we can easily become drawn into the bodily concept of life. You just open, you know, YouTube or what is it, you know, any, whatever, CNN, any type of news outlet, and immediately it's like what they do for ratings is they try to enrage people, you know, and therefore, you know, they try to, you know, oh, he insulted, you know, this particular ethnic group, or this person insulted that one, you know what I mean? It's like, remember in high school when people would, you have different groups that fight against each other, and then you have the person in the middle who's always, you know, that girl in the middle who's always trying to turn everyone against each other, and like, you know, did you hear what she said? Oh, yes, I heard. No, did you? Oh, my gosh, I can't believe it. Right? That's what the women's bathroom is for. Right? That's where all the gossip goes down, right? So that's basically what, you know, the news is. And that's kind of like what people talk about in the bodily concept of life is, you know, everyone forms into teams and groups in order to compete and dominate material nature in a more efficient way, you know, to kind of collectivize their power so that they can push themselves into the top of the hierarchy of power and sense gratification, right? And in doing so, then you have, you know, people gossip and they fight and they struggle against each other. These different groups are constantly fighting, you know, or they're joining sides, right? Oh, you don't like Chinese people either? Let's join groups, you know, let's, even though we hate each other, let's shake hands for this temporary, temporarily, then we can gang up together against this enemy we share, right? So this is essentially modern politics. But when you become absorbed in that, which right now in the United States, at least, well, all over the world, but especially in America, it's very inflamed, people like hate each other and fighting in the streets and stuff, right? So when you get drawn into that, automatically you lose the ability to see Krishna, right? Automatically, as soon as you identify with the body and you're drawn in, there's powerful forces which draw you in, because it's the very basis of existence as this bodily concept of life. And it's kind of like that's what you're familiar with for many, many lifetimes. And that kind of ignorance and identification with the body is so strong that you just hear one little word, in the bodily concept of life, immediately you enter into that, you're drawn into that. And because of that, you can no longer see Krishna. You lose your vision of the spiritual. Does that make sense? So we live in a world which is, a vast majority of people, 99.99999%, are all like immersed in this gross bodily concept of life and engaged on the material platform, fighting and politicking and competing and all these things. And so, therefore, for those who want to transcend the modes of nature, you have to disassociate yourself from that consciousness. Okay? And that's kind of what the next verse is about, all right? Let's look at the next paragraph, though, in this purport. There are many different kinds of living entities, human beings, demigods, animals, etc. And each and every one of them is under the influence of material nature, and all of them have forgotten the transcendental personality of Godhead. So you can hear out the window, there are some parrots, right? You can hear them. They're actually escapees, like people, they have pet parrots, and then the parrots escape every once in a while, and then they all kind of come together, and they have this, wild pack of parrots. There's quite a few of them, hundreds of them, right? And they all fly around Los Angeles. But what are they talking about? You can hear them, and they're really loud. And so what are they discussing? Imagine if they spoke English, right? You wouldn't be impressed. It would be like, where's the food? Where's the sex? Where's water? Where's this? There's some berries over here. No, you jerk, they're over here. Let's go this way. No, shut up. We're going this way. And, that's kind of like what they're talking about, right? It's not like, oh, yes, why Shakespeare? King George, of course. They're not like engaged in some sort of discussion. It's just like, sex is this way. No, it's that way, And so they're engaged like that. But you could see that that's totally, they're actually a pure spirit soul ultimately, right? They're a pure spirit soul just like you and I. And like we exalt someone like Srila Prabhupada or, some exalted spiritual master or acharya. But really, we all have that same potential, in our heart, we're all Uttama Adhikari Vaishnavas, the soul is an eternal servant of Krishna. And yet, because we're conditioned as a parrot, and we're drawn into that, imagine you're trying to preach to a parrot, somehow you're trying to speak to it about Krishna. And what if it could hear? What if it could understand? Obviously you can speak the holy name, and the holy name is so powerful that even in a conditioning of a parrot, even in the body of a bird, it'll affect you positively, right? It'll raise their consciousness if you're pure. For Lord Chaitanya, of course, is a dramatic example. But as soon as that parrot hears another parrot go, immediately it'll look, right? Immediately it'll forget, whatever spiritual mercy is being given to it, and immediately it will become absorbed in being a parrot, right? And the bodily consciousness of a parrot and all the different things that are conditioned psychologically and physically into a parrot, right? It becomes inflamed. So we're the same way. We become inflamed by material consciousness and we totally forget the personality of Godhead. Does that make sense? All right. So there is this kind of struggle for consciousness. Prabhupada says here, those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance and even those who are in the mode of goodness cannot go beyond the impersonal Brahman conception of the absolute truth. They are bewildered before the Supreme Lord in his personal feature, which possesses all beauty, opulence, knowledge, strength, fame, and renunciation. Even those who are in goodness cannot understand what hope is there for those in the modes of passion and ignorance. Okay, so in the mode of goodness, there is some hope that you can move forward towards transcendental realization. But even that is limited to the impersonal Brahman. Right? Even if you're a very pious and pure and peaceful Brahmana, you can't realize the Absolute Truth beyond Brahman by your own power. That's as far as you can go without the direct mercy of the personality of Godhead. For example, in Catholicism, it's called the magnificent beatitude, right? It's the light of God. It's the effulgence of God. And you may be able to leave material nature by your own power, by your own mystic, you know, you've cultivated some ability to exalt your consciousness over many, many lifetimes. And through the yogic practices, you're able to enter into Brahman. And many people do. But you can't go beyond that effulgence, right? Therefore, you see in the Isha Upanishad, you have the final prayers are praying, you know, please remove your effulgence so I can see your face, right? In other words, you can get to the effulgence by your power, by your yogic mystic processes, but in order to see the face, in order to go past that, to see the source of the effulgence, you have to actually pray. You have to request. You have to interact with the person, right? So, and you'll see, therefore, all over the world, you'll see that people realize Brahman. It's not limited to any particular culture. In fact, what was it? What was his name? Aldous Huxley, I think he wrote like, The Perennial Philosophy. And the idea it's perennial, like you'll find it everywhere in the world, the impersonal philosophy emerging into the light. You'll find it in the ancient Greeks. You'll find it among the ancient Egyptians. You'll find it among the Hermeticists. You know, all these different religions and philosophies, you'll find it in Europe, you'll find it in South America, right? You'll find it among Native Americans. Wherever you look, you'll find people having an experience of the impersonal divine light, right? Especially the Tibetans, and in Asia, you have the Zen Buddhists in China and Japan. And so there's always, all over the world, this, and Platonists, you know, these different ancient philosophies, all over the world, there's this experience of Brahman. And so it's there, it's naturally within you. You have the capacity to experience that by virtue of being a soul. But to go beyond that, then there's mercy is required. As like I said before, you want to get into a, like a club, you know, you want to get into a club. You know, anybody can walk and line up on the street and come to the doorway of the club, right? And even from the doorway of the club, you can hear the sound, you can hear the music, you know, you can hear you can smell, you know, the sweat and alcohol or whatever, right? You're on the edge of the club, but in order to actually enter in, then you have to get permission, you know, you have to be on the VIP list, right? And so in the same way, you know, you can experience the effulgence of Vaikuntha, you can experience the effulgence of the spiritual world, but to enter in, you have to receive permission, okay? So let's take a look at text 14, which elaborates on that point. Daivihi esha gunamai mama maya dadateya mam eviye prapadyante mayametam tadantite. This divine energy of mine, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. All right, so mama maya dadateya. So Krishna's maya is very, very difficult to overcome. Is duratyaya. Ati. You can't go over it. You can't cross beyond it. It's extremely hard, right? Even to, in other words, all living entities, even from Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, are conditioned by the material energy. And it forms a curtain that covers Krishna. And what to speak of that curtain, there's also the curtain of the impersonal light, right? That's also included here. And so you cannot cross beyond it. It's very difficult to get out of Maya, but by Krishna's mercy, you can. He can make it very easily. Even you may be very unqualified, right? This is part of why it's so important to develop humility. Because, I mean, humility and knowledge are simultaneous. The more knowledgeable you become, the more humble you become, right? And so, why? Because in order to surrender to Krishna, you have to have knowledge, right? I'm sorry, you have to have humility, right? Like, in other words, you cannot get out of material nature unless you're humble enough to surrender to the Supreme Lord. And therefore, you'll see, as people become more wise in life, to speak of in devotional service, it's always accompanied by a level of humility, a level of kind. There's a sort of, you know, like when you're young and ignorant and inexperienced and foolish, then there's a lot of pride and a lot of ambition. There's a lot of expectations of others, and you know, you have big plans for the material world. But as you get a little more mature, then you start to sort of become more humble and gentle in your dealings. It's less about having expectations and demands, and more about being kind and forgiving and gentle, right? Giving up anger, lust, and greed, and all of these things. It's essentially an experience of humility, becoming more humble. And that is synonymous with becoming more wise, right, about reality. And so ultimately, this matures to where you're becoming humble and wise about the Supreme Lord himself, recognizing that all things are actually Krishna's personal property, and that they are Krishna, and that they're meant for his enjoyment, right? And therefore, you know, you become more humble towards God. Basically, like our entire material existence and what we're doing in the material world, we're turning away from God, trying to dominate and enjoy the material energy. And so as you become wise and as you become humble, you give up that sense of dominance. You give up that attempt to enjoy and control, right? And material nature helps you, because as you go on in life, she shows you that it's impossible to control and enjoy, right? She beats you over the head, and ultimately you get old. You get old, and the whole body, the very basis of what you're going to enjoy and what you're clinging on to very strongly, it starts to break down right before your eyes, right? Just like if you have a car and you buy it when it's new, and then after like 10 years or whatever, everything starts breaking down. You know, you fix one thing and then something else breaks and something else breaks. That's what happens as you get older. This breaks and that breaks, and then you fix this and it's real difficult and you struggle through it. And then this starts to break down. All your organs start to gradually fail, and your senses become weak. So in the right attitude, this is very humbling, right? You renounce your desire to enjoy. You realize, my Lord, you know, there's no way to enjoy in this world. I'm so foolish for trying. And let me just surrender unto you. Let me just admit that I'm not the enjoyer. You're the enjoyer. Everything is meant for you, not for me. You see? So the more you're able to grasp onto that consciousness and get into that mood of surrender to Krishna, then the more you come out of Maya by Krishna's grace. Right? It's only through that recognition of Krishna's glories, Vasudeva Sarvamiti, that you can actually, you know, in that humility, that willingness to accept that Krishna, you're the enjoyer. I'm not. I surrender unto you. I exist simply to make you happy. Simply to give you pleasure. So the more you do that, the more you can cross over material nature. Prabhupada says here, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has innumerable energies, and all of these energies are divine. So Krishna calls them Daivihi Esha Gunamayi. Right? Even the material nature is divine. Although the living entities are part of his energy and they're therefore divine due to contact with material energy, the original superior power is covered. Being thus covered by material energy, one cannot possibly overcome its influence. As previously stated, both the material and spiritual natures, being emanations from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are eternal. All right, so you're actually situated in divine nature right now. And that has very important philosophical results, you know. Like that particular concept, it should actually affect the entire way we deal with reality. For example, in the West, you know, there's a long history of sort of antagonism towards nature and thinking that nature is there for you to dominate and enjoy, right? It's a very strong, very, like, even if you just go back into the United States, not even 100 years ago, well, like the early 1900s, 1917 or whatever, you'll see, you know, just exploding entire mountainsides looking for gold, right, just here in California. You know, like if you go like where my mother lives up in the Sierra Nevada mountains, you see entire mountainsides that have been stripped, right? They would take rivers and they would get them under high pressure and use hoses and just blast away entire mountainsides looking for veins of quartz, you know, so they can find gold. Just destroying, you know, acres of nature. What to speak of the trees? You know, that's after they've cut down all the trees, right? Trees that are there for 1,000 years, you know, redwood trees and sequoias, and they just cut them all down and butcher them. You see, it's even you go there now, and it's part of the culture, right? There's always museums for lumberjacking, and you know what I mean? Everything is like, you know, this is our history. And it shows, you know, some 10 guys standing on top of a 1,000-year-old tree that they cut, you know, within 5-10 minutes, right? So you get this sort of slash and burn attitude towards nature. That is essentially where it comes from originally. It's a philosophical idea that material nature is somehow not divine, right? That it's opposed to the divine order. It's the realm of Satan, you know? It's inherently antagonistic, like Maya itself. You know, we're jivas within Maya, with an illusion. We're in the realm of the devil, you might say, and we're struggling against it, trying to become liberated. But this energy we struggle against is inherently opposed to us. It's inherently tinged with evil. It's corrupted, right? And therefore we're struggling. You know, nature itself is evil. You'll see in like in some religions, like in the Gnostics, which is sort of like an earlier form of Christianity, which was later deemed heretical, the idea that nature itself, like the demiurge or the creator, who we'd say is Brahma, is actually evil. And he created the world to punish you and torture you, right? So there's this very strong tradition, you know, that of the world being evil or at best simply material and soulless and meant for your enjoyment and exploitation, right? God gave this world to me to exploit and enjoy as much as possible. And ultimately, it's all going to end. You know, the world's going to end any minute now, so why do we care about the future, right? So these deep philosophical convictions have sort of widespread social results. And so you'll see within the Vedic culture, very much there's the idea that material nature is divine. Daivihi esha gunamayi. You'll see even, I think, Jutukarma wrote that book, Divine Nature, right? So nature itself is divine. It's not God directly. We don't worship nature. But nature comes from God, and therefore you should respect it, right? There should be a relationship with nature that is humble, and you're respecting nature. And the material energy, you're recognizing that it's God's energy. It's directly in contact with Krishna. It's illuminated by the power of Krishna. The Paramatma pervades everything. And so there should be this sort of humble attitude. And then within nature, you're surrendering to the Supreme Lord. And ultimately, you're transcending nature through that process, not through fighting against nature, not through having a negative attitude towards Maya or the things in this world that attract you, right? That doesn't help. Having a combative attitude towards the things which tempt you. No, it's surrender to God, begging God for His mercy, and then realizing that those things, those very things that you're tempted by, are actually nothing but God's energy, by His grace. You see? All right. So let's continue here. Let's look in a little bit down in this purport. Prabhupada says here, there's a couple sentences down, inferior material nature is defined herein as divine nature due to its divine connection and movement by the divine will. Being conducted by divine will, material nature, although inferior, acts so wonderfully in the construction and destruction of the cosmic manifestation. The Vedas confirm this as follows. Mayam tu prakritam vidyan mayanam tu maheshwaram. Although Maya illusion is false or temporary, the background of Maya is the supreme magician, the personality of Godhead who is Maheshwar, the supreme controller. That's Shvetashvatara Upanishad 4.10. All right, so it's very interesting here. Prabhupada's calling Krishna the supreme magician, right? So Krishna is he's Yogeshwar. You know, all mystic power is situated within him. He actually does what is magical. Much of what we consider to be magic, or the realm of the magician, is essentially he's able to manipulate nature in supernatural ways. He's able to do things which are beyond human ability. And usually it's by the assistance of the divine, the assistance of demigods, or demons, or ghosts. Right, that's basically, for the most part, that's kind of what magic is. There's other things too, but you know, it's and usually the other things consist of using yogic forms of meditation to try to affect reality. But anyway, but ultimately, even the power of these demons, these gods and demigods and upadevas, ghosts, all these creatures, they're just manifesting one little tiny particle of Krishna's mystic opulence, his mystic power. And Prabhupada's giving us here an example of Krishna's mystic power. Like, for example, say you have a yogi or a magician, he's able to make something appear in his hand, you know, Prapti Siddhi. Not like a fake street magician, but like a real mystic is able to somehow manifest ashes or something. Or, you know, here's golden jewels for you, right? And I just make it appear. Krishna is able to do that with entire universes. He's able to make them appear and disappear. He's able to create them and destroy them. Entire existence is created by him and vanishes due to his will alone. He doesn't have to do any ritual, right? He doesn't have to appease or communicate. That's what magic rituals are. They're communicating with different levels of consciousness in the universe, different entities. It's just you're opening it's a phone line, you know? You're drawing some magic circle, and, you know, you're just trying to open a phone line and make a phone call and make a request, you know? That's all it is. But Krishna, he doesn't have to request anything. All he has to do is will. He just desires and it happens. That's what a powerful magician he is, right? He doesn't even have to speak mantras. He just desires and entire universes come into existence. That's powerful, right? Therefore, he's Maheshwar. He's ultimately the supreme dominator and lord. Prabhupada says here another meaning of guna as rope. It is to be understood that the conditioned soul is tightly bound by the ropes of illusion. A man bound by the hands and feet cannot free himself. He must be helped by a person who is unbound. Because the bound cannot help the bound, the rescuer must be liberated. Therefore, only Krishna or his bona fide representative, the spiritual master, can release the conditioned soul. Without such superior help, one cannot be freed from the bondage of material nature. So we're not Houdini, right? Even if Houdini struggled and struggled against the bonds of material existence, he can't free himself. You know, he's in this predicament. He's the hanged man, right? He's upside down in a vat of water, you know, surrounded by a crowd with his arms and legs shackled in a straitjacket, right? And he's trying to free himself. That's our condition, you know? And we can't get out unless somebody who is, you know, you'll see when some kind of magician tries this, some entertainer tries this, and, you know, sometimes they have to take a sledgehammer and smash the glass, you know, because they're drowning, right? So, you know, invariably they're dependent upon someone who's not bound. What if you took all the assistants and bound them up as well, right? Good luck. So that's our condition in material existence. Even these great demigods and powerful beings, they can't help us because they're also bound, right? So Krishna, he's the only one who's actually completely independent. He's the only one who's totally free. Everyone else is essentially subjugated by his power. We're all moving with and according to his power. And then Prabhupada mentions here the spiritual master as his bona fide representative, right? So the way he arranges it is that, you know, he has representatives in material nature, and they're powerful enough to bring his power to you according to your time and place. They'll communicate to you in a way that you can understand and manifest his power for you. You know, it's really, let me just try to convey something sort of subtle here, is that it's kind of like our whole existence of, you know, we're very proud and we think we understand the universe. We think the way that we live and the way that we experience the world, that is the world, right? But it's really not. It's kind of like we're conditioned by our own material existence. Our consciousness is limited. Our ability to understand reality is limited. And we live in a kind of bubble. Right? We live in a very small sort of fraction of experience of reality. Like, in other words, we don't understand anything. You know, we really don't understand reality at all. Even the scientists and things like that, you can even study material nature to the ends of the world and you can't really understand it. It's just far beyond our capacity. We only understand a tiny little sliver. We're only looking at things from our small little bubble, right? And yet, Krishna will descend into that bubble as the spiritual master, right? He'll come as a particular human being, you know, or he'll empower a human being with his shakti and with his ability to expand your consciousness. And that human being will descend into your bubble, right? He'll come to you according to your particular conditioning, a particular time and place and the world. You know, he'll insert himself within the history of humanity as in a way that, and speak to the world in a way that people can understand and connect with. Does that make sense? Do you get what I'm trying to convey here? Yeah. It's kind of like you know, we as living entities, we really have no ability to understand anything. You know, we're really confined by our consciousness into a very small perspective of what is reality. And yet Krishna is God. He actually injects himself, you know, by empowering a particular living entity to come into your world, you know, to come into a level of consciousness that you can understand. And he'll interact with you through that devotee. He'll empower that devotee to be his representative, and then he'll work through that devotee, and that devotee will speak your language. He'll understand the world the way you do, right? He'll see reality in the same way you do. He'll deal with reality as you do. He lives in your world. He understands your world, and he speaks to you from that, through that world. Does that make sense? Through that experience that you have, he communicates to you. And this way, he's really entering into your consciousness and rescuing you, because he's empowering a pure soul to do this. Right? So Krishna really does make it, he works very hard, you know? I don't want to say he works hard, but Krishna, he cares, and therefore he expands his mercy in such a way that anybody can be reached. Isn't that amazing? And so you'll see, you know, there's so many different devotees, and through the grace of the Parampara system, will become empowered to actually give you Krishna and to expand your consciousness, to reach into your illusion, right? Duratyaya, which is incredibly difficult to overcome, and then actually speak to you and communicate to you and engage you in such a way that you can become purified. All right?